Blog Talk Radio.
Can you guys hear me online in the chat room? Oh, now we have sound.
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, you can hear me, but I don't know if they can in the chat room. Can you guys hear me in the chat room? Can you guys answer me if you can hear me? Yep. Okay, thank you, Jennifer.
Maybe you better.
Okay. Yeah, they said yes. Okay, good. Thank you. She says quietly. Huh, I don't know why. Is that better, Jackie, that sound, now that I'm talking? Yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay. This show changed a million times for a lot of different reasons, but thankfully my friend Peter Moon is with me tonight.
Discuss
whatever the hell we feel like discussing. So thanks, everyone, for joining us. And I'm going to let Peter tell you a little bit about himself right now. Peter, tell us, for those who don't know who you are, which I think everyone does know who you are, but tell us about yourself.
Okay, and before I do that, I want to make sure if the people in the chat room could tell you how good the audio is coming across, because your voice is hearable. It just seems just when you speak, there's no static. It just seems when you speak, it seems a little funny.
Okay. So,
ask your people in the chat room.
Okay.
Almost like there's a lack of continuity when you speak.
Great.
A transmission quality.
Yeah, it's breaking up. Someone said it's muffled and scratchy. Darn it all.
Do I sound scratchy or muffled? Do I sound that way too?
No.
Can you tell me? Okay. Well, we were planning on having you do most of the talking tonight, but you know, I was hoping to interview you. I guess, anyway, I'm an author and publisher. My company is Sky Books. My most famous book is The Montauk Project, Experiments in Time. I've written about time travel experiments that took place at Montauk, New York, in conjunction with Preston Nichols, who was the scientist who sort of put it all together, and then I helped him write it, and then I got involved with many adventures in terms of pursuing this urban legend that is more than a legend, but is hard to pin down. So anyway, Corrine, there's something that happened that was a little mysterious as I was driving home today, and I saw the leaves begin to fall. And we have not had the leaves fall to any significant degree. The leaves were actually falling today. We've had a beautiful autumn in New York. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you still have the leaves on the trees up there in Massachusetts. Do you?
Not really. Not so much.
Okay, well, our leaves stayed, so it was falling. And for some reason, I thought of you and your email name, Autumn Song. And I said, I thought of you, and now we're doing a show together. I saw your inquiry on Facebook, so I said, wow, this is a good time to connect, because autumn is such a magical time. And we've just, as I said, we just had the most beautiful summer and fall that I've ever known after living in New York for 32 years.
Oh.
So this is a great foot to get started on. To remember, the sun is now in Scorpio. This is the time of the harvest.
Yeah.
And yes, and I thought it would be appropriate if you wanted to talk on a Halloween theme, I think, today.
Yeah, sort
of. Desire to.
Yeah, we were supposed to do the show on Salem witches and Bridget Bishop, but the two ladies that were supposed to join me couldn't join me, so I thought about talking about that, and then I was like, well, let's talk about the Virgin Mary, and then I'm like, well, wait, no, let's talk about synchronicity. So
I can talk about all of these things. I can talk about all of these things, and I took a trip to Salem one time, and I took a trip to Salem because I was interested in, I was pursuing the name of Parsons, Jack Parsons. And it had been the result of, I was investigating Parsons, who was, of course, the rocket scientist who participated in the Babylon, working with Marjorie Cameron and L. Ron Hubbard. And that was my second book, Montauk Revisited: Adventures of Synchronicity. For those of you who are not familiar with my work, after I wrote the Montauk Project Experiment, when I went to investigate it, I began to have experiences with synchronicity and the occult. And I have always, long before I knew you, I always knew there was cult corridor that went up from New York to Connecticut, and where it sort of sits at Massachusetts. We might call Marblehead Massachusetts as the sort of the end point of it, but it extends up onto Maine and Booth Bay and that area. I know you're going to be staying there. Did you have that vacation, or are you still planning that vacation to Maine?
No, I can't do it, Peter, because I don't have enough people to join in, so it's just really... it's not feasible for me right now, but thanks for remembering that.
it was a good idea. I still want to get up to Booth Bay because there's been some strange phenomena up there, that whole area. Now, in any case, I had met a woman. She's passed away now, Eugenia Macer Story. She was a writer. She lived in Greenwich Village, and you know, because you wanted to keep this creepy, I met her at a conspiracy festival or conference at the Village Gate, which is a club in Greenwich Village. And this was in the daytime. It wasn't club time. This is where I was being scoped out by Ingo Swann, was like falling out and moving around, scoping out my psi fields. And I noticed this strange little man. I was talking to Elaine Douglas, and a ufologist who was questioning me on the Montauk Project. And anyway, at this conference, I met Eugenia Meisterstory, and she was I don't know what to call her. She was a researcher. She had written a book about UFOs, and she was a writer who had some notoriety as a writer. And she had was very interested in Jack Parsons, very interested in Jack Parsons. And she told me this funny story. It was about, what was this story? She had met a man, and I don't know if I'm going to go on to that story. I don't accurately. It had to do with a Chinese restaurant, and he thought if he had sex with her that he would have great magical power. And I guess he did, but it didn't work. His magical powers didn't work. So every time she would see, I think it was this restaurant, Lam's Chinese Garden or Lam's, she would break up into laughter because there was somehow the restaurant was associated with this experience. Maybe she saw him there, and she would just laugh every time she saw this Lam's Chinese, or I don't remember what the connection was. I'm probably not telling the story as accurately as I could, but the whole idea, this was funny to me because of Lam was the Praetor human intelligence that Aleister Crowley contacted in 1918 before he went out to Montauk. So he was communicating with this entity known as LAM, L-S, how he spelled it, and he drew a picture of it, which was sort of the prototype for the gray alien. And of course, LAM, he said, meant way in Tibetan. LAM is also the same word as llama, just adding a syllable, and llama is, of course, signifies a teacher, but LAM also means a couple. In Chinese, it means blue, which would signify the blue race. And Lam also refers to the swastika. That was one of the names for the swastika. So in Tibet, not necessarily in Germany, or as we would know, the swastika. I found this up through some obscure research. An author named Thomas Wilson, who wrote the quintessential book on the swastika. It's a book on swastika. It's hard to find. Anyway, so Eugenia had told me about Marblehead, and that she had gone up there and investigating a young. It was a hotbed of activity. So I got out a map in the days when we used to use maps of Massachusetts, and I saw, wow, Parsons Boulevard. And it was right south of Marblehead in a little district. Can't remember the name of the district, but was right south of Marblehead, Massachusetts. So I said, I got there. And in the course of my, so during that time period, I was, it just happened. I was meeting these people that were connected to magical societies or the occult. Like I couldn't get away from them if I wanted to. I was participating in their adventures. Sometimes they would participate in my, because when I wrote this book, Montauk Revisited, I got a lot of attention in the occult world. And I would get letters that would say, Dear Freighter. And of course, a freighter means brother, how magical people talk to each other. And this was, so anyway, I don't remember what year it was, but it was several years after this that I finally, I saw this Parsons Boulevard or street or whatever it was near Marblehead. Devereaux was the name of the district, Devereaux. And I said, I want to go there. So when I told Preston about Parsons in Marlboro, he says, oh, yes, I know. He said, I used to go there all the time. Now, what is the, what the hell does that mean? He didn't go up to Matt. What does it mean? Why does he say that? You've met Preston. Keep laughing.
No, go ahead.
You want to say something? Go ahead.
No, Preston hadn't gone up to Marblehead.
He's pretty strange.
Okay.
Say that again.
I said you're saying that Preston didn't in fact go to Marblehead.
He probably did, but he said, I said, Parsons, oh yeah, all the time. Now, Preston has a way of kind of tuning into a frequency, and he's has a empathic. So he was kind of picking up on some sort of energy. Now, as a point of fact, I don't know how much time Preston spent in Taxachusetts, as he likes to call it. He always referred to it as Taxachusetts. You may have some personal experiences with being taxed in Massachusetts. But he would go up to Maine, Rangeley, Maine.
Oh, yeah.
And he owned an antenna farm up there at one point. And that's where he discovered the secret Wilhelm Reich materials in a barn.
It's still there.
And you talked to him about that?
No, I know Rangeley, Maine has the Wilhelm Reich Museum.
Well, he bought an antenna farm near there at one point. He doesn't still have it. And these antenna farms that he will talk about, this is in the early days, these are all sort of suggestive of a prototype for the HART project. Because I recently found out from one of Preston's friends that there was a whole antenna farm in New York, which we knew as the ITT Brentwood Project in 1963. So they were fooling around a lot with massive antenna structures back in the day. And, of course, this was right near the Wilhelm Reich estate. But in any case, so he used to go up there. But in any case, when I went up to Massachusetts on this trip, because my purpose was to go to this Devereux area and see this Parsons Boulevard and see what the hell, pray tell, was there. Why was I going there? So I had I was put in touch. Psychic put me in touch with a woman who lived on Long Island during that period, who was a full-blooded Celtic witch. Okay. Connected to the Druid tradition. And you want creepy? Well, she wasn't really creepy, but she was certainly a unique person. And I went to visit her one day. That's how I met her. She said, well, come over and you can meet me. And she lived in a basement apartment, and the entire apartment was completely black. Everything was black. And I know you have a lot of friends that might associated with the occult. You ever known anybody who's had a black house?
You know what? That's a good point. No, I have not.
This was the intern. It wasn't her whole house. And she, you know, says, okay, so she brings me over to her altar. And she says, this is my altar. And this loud crack. It goes, crack! And she's shocked. Well, you're laughing. Do you know what that crack was?
No.
I'll tell you. I knew what the crack was immediately. She says, what was that? I said, that's the guardian spirit of the altar.
Oh.
It was acknowledging my presence. And
wow.
It was sort of the spirit that, because any time I would meet a woman in this area of the occult, I would always see that they all had we can call it a guardian spirit, we can demon that was controlling them, or they were under the influence. So, I mean, you could talk to the person, but you could also talk to the spirit. They were all, you know, what the relationship was between them and their demon spirit, I couldn't really say because I didn't try to probe too deeply to, you know, pin them against the wall, speak.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed that they were, if they weren't necessarily being, they were under the influence of a, and I'm not saying the demon was completely negative. I'm not saying, certainly not saying that it was positive, but this was a phenomena I used to notice with women of this ilk. Now, this, so anyway, had always wanted to go to Salem. So she, you know, asked me to go with her, or asked to go with me. And I remember we on the way up, I made an appearance at a bookstore in, what was it called, Newport, Rhode Island, with Billy Goodman. He was a famous radio DJ. He's passed away now. He used to operate out of Las Vegas. He was sort of doing the Art Bell circuit before Art Bell.
Right, Peter, I'm going to...
He was always a very positive sport.
Peter, I'm going to interrupt you because the sound is really wonky and people are complaining. The sound is going off and on. And I have Chris, who just sent you a contact request, who's the producer here. She's going to try to help us with the sound. So accept her friendship request. And she's saying, all right, so why don't I do this? I'm going to take a break. I'm going to play a song if anyone can hear it. She's going to try to help you and help me determine what the sound problem is so we can get this straightened out. Okay.
Okay.
We'll see you guys.
Okay, sounds better already.
Yeah.
Well, I friended her.
Both of you guys stay right where you are for a minute, though, and we'll talk real quick in the green room when the song starts, okay?
Okay. I'm going to put this on. Okay. Sorry, you guys.
I lost myself on a cool, damp night. I gave myself in that misty light, was hypnotized by a strange delight under a lilac tree. I made wine from the lilac tree, put my heart in its recipe, makes me see what I want to see. Be what I want to be. When I think more than I want to think, I do things I never should do. I drink much more than I ought to drink, because it brings me back you. Lilac wine is sweet and heady, like my love. Lilac wine. Lilac wine.
as you're born, they make you feel small. By giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion, sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. To be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
All right, so we're just still trying to get Corrine in here. Corrine? Okay. Corrine, is this you?
Corrine? No, sorry.
Oh, okay, who's this?
This is Trish.
Trish. You just saved me coming and asking you later, you know what I mean? Thanks, Trish. Okay, Corrine, if you're listening, use your Skype and call, dial 818-369-0327. Please and thank you. Hello, everybody. I'm here with Peter Moon. I've kicked Corrine out of her own show, and I've taken over the world.
That's cool. She's just looking to do something creepy. So. I don't really know you, so why don't you tell me a little? I know you have a show right on after this.
Yeah, I broadcast on a different platform, and I did broadcast on Blog Talk Radio for 4 years, Broken Talk Radio for 4 years, and I became dissatisfied and I moved. But yes, I have done a show for four years last since July, so.
And could you tell me, I mean, the audience might already know you, but could you tell me a little bit about yourself and what you generally talk about?
look at you trying to take over the show now.
I want to know who I'm talking to.
Well, pretty soon you won't be talking to me at all because Corinne will hopefully dial in. Let me just double check real quick.
Visit purpleplates.com today. For over 40 years, the Purple Energy Plates have been delivering amazing results for their many customers. Inspired by the great genius Nikola Tesla, the harmony, healing, and energetic effects of the plates have proven over and over to be beneficial and often miraculous to thousands of customers. With their money-back guarantee and the many benefits, how can you afford not to get one? Check their site for daily specials and choose from their many energy products. You won't be sorry. Visit them today at purpleplates.com for mind, body, and spirit. And expect a miracle.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Sorry about that. I think Corinne probably hit a song because she had to reboot. And I don't blame that on BTR. I blame that on Corinne thinking like, oh, I better play a song because I'm going to reboot my computer. So, because she clearly couldn't hear us. And so anyway, let's do a quick shout out here, guys, and welcome everybody to the show. And thank you for your great your patience through these technical difficulties. Alicia is here. Angie, hi Angie, long time no see. Christy Hu is here. Donna DiPietro, and three guests are lurking. Jennifer's Journey, Kathleen, how are you? Cool cat Kathleen. Mama D Angel, medium Renee Richards, who broadcasts Friday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. And does Teaching Tuesdays as well in the a.m. I don't know what time. Oscar Talks, how are you doing? Very nice to see you as well. Raven Spirit, and that's Marguerite. Small Elk, oh, so long since I've seen you, Dolores. Spaced Out Radio, Spirit Radio with Kathleen Moore. And she's actually my guest, of course, on every second Wednesday over at Curious Times. Love how you get the little Curious Times plugged in, right? And Jackie Trickster Wolf, how are you doing? And Wildflower Wind Sandy, our friendly neighborhood numerologist, your number forecast, Carol Patton. And one more guest just scooted in. And now we are waiting for the hostess with the mostest. So Peter, thanks for your patience as well. And I didn't even know Corinne was having a show today, so I came late and I missed the very first part of your discussion with Corinne. So I know you're wanting to know about me. There's not a lot to know. I do a radio show.
I have a question. You're Canadian.
Yes.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice, like from Quebec. You're from Quebec.
No, not even close.
I got the country right.
Oh, yes, you got the country right, but oh my goodness gracious. Well, I don't want to insult the whole province of Quebec, but I'm in Alberta, which is the second most western province in the country.
I know what Alberta is, and I've heard that voice, and certainly it's a very Canadian voice you have.
I could have said Minnesota, you know what I mean, and tricked you. Because
you should have said Minnesota. And what do you talk about on your shows?
I try not to talk at all, but I do wind up talking incessantly. We do a lot of the same kind of things, paranormal, psychic stuff, metaphysical, you know, and then just foolishness, ridiculous. And then every now and then somebody pokes me into a political fight. So we try to avoid politics on the show because everyone ends up mad at me and I wind up mad at a bunch of people. So we're just trying to, really my show just provides a hangout for people. You know, they've gotten used to having a place to go every night from 10 p.m. Eastern till midnight. And so we moved over to a new platform called intuitalks.com. where we're able to be not only on via audio, but we can have our webcams on and I can interview my guests with the webcam. It's sort of like a virtual classroom environment, and we're rather enjoying it. So so there you go. That's me.
Well, that's good. Thank you for making that clear. And have we gotten any whispers from Corinne on as far as anything?
She's rebooting. She's showing offline both here on the show and on her Skype. So so why don't we try to pick up wherever you were?
We'll pick up, and I just want to say that it's like because of the subject matter I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and I'm talking about real occult energy. Oh, I said I'm talking about real occult energy, and she shows up.
Yeah, here, I'm just going to try and... here we go. We'll see if she answers here. And then I can get out of Dodge and just leave you guys to your show.
There she is.
Well, there's still bubbles, so she hasn't answered yet. There you go.
Hello?
All right.
Hello?
Yeah, your sound is really bad, Corinne. You know what?
Oh, my.
You should try to dial into the call-in number. How about that? Because then at least I can mute you while he's speaking.
I'm gonna try it again right now.
Just dial in. All don't hit the Skype button. Dial it like you own it. You know.
So hang up on me.
Okay. Oh my goodness,
This is. I say, I'm talking about something that was real occult force here, and I don't know if you were listening to us talk before, if you were following the story, Chris, were you?
No, well, as I said, I didn't know Corinne had a show on, so I jumped on.
You jumped on late.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I was talking about real live occult force in the personage of this witch I was, you know, taking with me up to Salem because I was doing an investigation, and of course I was investigating the family tree of Jack Parsons,
uh-huh.
and he was a famous magician. That certainly the audience is familiar with because I mentioned him. But anyway, the Parsons clan was one of the original families of Massachusetts and also Eastern Long Island. So the name Parsons went hand in hand with being a Parson.
Uh-huh.
And when we went there, and as I was saying, is when you start talking about, and this was a full-blooded Celtic witch I was with, and she transmitted a lot of occult force. And I wasn't really so much, I guess, pandering to that. You know, she drove the salt out of the car to protect us on our journey and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we when we arrived, we spent a few days there because my real purpose was to go to this little community of Devereaux and look for this street, this Parsons Avenue or street or whatever it was, and also to study in the Salem Library some of the history of the Parsons family. I think one of the most interesting things I found out on that trip was from a man who, I think it was called Healed Occult Bookshop, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a classic bookstore in Salem. I don't know if it's still there. And I spoke to the owner, Rory, and he explained to me that back in the days of Salem, what and his family goes back there as well, was the you'd be a preacher by daytime because the preacher was the most, I guess what you'd say, lucrative job you could have in those days.
Uh-huh.
But by night, the typical pastor was a occultist. He was a practicing occultist. And, yeah, sometimes this meant Satanist.
Uh-huh.
Where you draw the line, I can't draw the lines here. He didn't say that necessarily, Satanist, but certainly a magician. So, and of course, these things were dark by night. Daytime was a whole different.
Okay, I think I have Corinne here now, so hang on. Corinne?
My sound okay?
Well, at least all the static is gone and everything. Yeah, the static is gone and everything, you know? So let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, obviously.
So I'm gonna just mute my Skype thing. Thanks for the nice chat there, Peter.
Thanks, Chris. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. Take it easy, and I'll just be in the wings waiting for you guys to need me again. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank
you, Chris.
So, Kareem,
you're back.
Yeah,
Kareem,
I think I'm back. I don't know where the hell I am, but I guess I'm here. God, for the love of God, Peter, for the love of God. So what were you talking about?
I didn't really get to say much from when you left off. I was talking about that I had met Rory, the man who owned the occult bookshop in Salem, who you've probably encountered at one time. If he's still there, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I haven't met him. But Buddha, Buddha's out there. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yes, well, Buddha's a whole other story. Buddha's a friend of mine and Kareem's. And in any case, I think he's the one who introduced me to you, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, I was talking about the occult force that was on this trip with this witch. And anyway, I met this man who owned the bookstore, and he explained that the parsons of those days, meaning the preachers, were occultists by night and preachers by day. The preacher being a lucrative position in society, and the occultist being the magician or whatever they were doing at night. This was very typical. This was the standard, not the exception. So anyway, I had not really intending it, because I didn't sort of like ask her to come with me. She wanted to go with me, and I was accepting of this request. But I was carrying a lot of occult force with me, having her there. And I remember when we would sit in a restaurant to have breakfast, it was a pretty big, it was almost like a cafeteria. It was this big. And she would say, "You sit with your back to the window, and I want my back to everybody, because everybody keeps staring at me." And I thought this was very curious, because this is Salem, where they have, a witch logo on the police cars. And it was like, these people were not tourists. These people were the locals. And when they saw a real witch, they had the fur went up on their back, because she was the real thing. And it was kind of a unique experience. I was, I felt that I was out-Saleming Salem, in at least one aspect. And you see the place of Laurie Cabot, who's the famous commercial witch up there, and people just lined out her door to get I don't know if they were getting a reading or going into the store. And Buddha could tell you the whole history on her and some of the characters that played into the occult Salem scene. And
he has told me.
Yes, and it's a fascinating discussion. Of course, for those who do not know, Buddha is a friend of ours. He goes by the name Buddha. John Paroli is his, I guess what you'd say, Christian name. And he was studying in the OTO, and he actually cracked the code of Aleister Crowley's Book of the Law. And he helped me with this, understand it, and I put it in the Montauk Book of the Living, which explains that Aleister Crowley's mysterious Book of the Law, which is just was the, they say that Jack Parsons was the magical, his work with Ellen Hubbard was the magical, the magical ceremony of the century. The greatest magical ceremony or ritual of the century. Well, Crowley's book was the greatest magical book of the century, the Book of the Law. But he never understood it, by his own admission. Buddha was able to crack the code, and basically, and I explained it, and I'm not going to try and explain it over the air, but basically it demonstrates that this extracurricular intelligence that was channeling through Crowley, and sometimes using language that would certainly have shocked the morals of people, was really giving a coded the demonstration of the DNA spiral and what DNA was about, and how the DNA parlayed into the geometry of the Kabbalah. So you can say anything you want about the, I guess, the veneer of this book, but it's certain, and I had done a lot of research into it and had a certain amount of experiences with it when I was investigating Montauk, because it sort of alludes to the Montauk Project and the Philadelphia Experiment quite specifically, mentioning the 40s and the 80s, the war machine of the 80s. Now, and go ahead. Go ahead.
Right. And so the OTO stands for what, Peter?
The Ordo Templi Orientis, which means the Order of the Temple of the East. And they claim to have an association with the Knights Templar. This is an organization that sprouted out of Germany, and Crowley was became the titular head of it. And the whole successorship of that was, there was a big dispute about that, but it went into the hands of certain people who owned the legal, I guess what you'd call, rights to use the name OTO, and they are a magical organization which I guess has a certainly a lot of celebrities have become a part of it, and sometimes you'll see articles usually emanating out of the UK, and some people will tell you it's sinister. Buddha was a member of it, but the more he learned and cracked the code, they didn't want anything to do with him, so he has had, and he says a lot of the issues have been affected him very negatively. Anyway, you're kind of drowning out.
He said they were trying to kill him.
Well, what I would say, and I can't comment on that.
Of course
I certainly. What, dear? What?
I said, of course I'm drowning out.
Oh, well, yeah, but you see, when we're talking about this occult force, it can kind of jam up the airwaves. But what I was going to say is that whether or not they were trying to kill him, because I can't really comment on that because I don't really know. I'm not saying he's wrong. Certainly there were occult energies that were working through various people that were associated with that organization that were trying to get to him. And he's had quite some challenges. I've had to deal with certain challenges myself, in not necessarily in terms of the OTO per se. The OTO has also helped me, not necessarily intentionally helping me in the way I wanted to be helped, but certainly I was given the name of Marjorie Cameron and her phone number from the head of the OTO, who I met serendipitously. And, of course, I didn't really know anything about the organization at the time, other than what little I'd read about it, in that it was sort of the legacy of Crowley. But in any case, I was talking about this this book, the Book of the Law, which Buddha had cracked, and because he's quite gifted as somebody who understands patterns and whatnot. And I am really thankful that I did understand it, because Crowley, the Book of the Law says that Crowley will not understand it, but somebody will come after him who will, understand it or do it. And so Parsons was working in that fashion. Hubbard was working in that fashion. They wanted to be the one. And, of course, I've publicized this. I've gotten a lot of, I guess, what you call traction with that book, in terms of it, writing about it, moving along, sort of surfing the wave, because I was not into these occult organizations or rituals per se. I certainly was able to ride the current, much like a surfer would ride a surfboard. And Buddha provided the answers for me. I cannot say that I am the one. I don't want to say I'm the one. But Buddha was one who did understand it. And, I don't know if he wants to be called the one either, but he's the best thing we have as far as being the one who understands and was able to talk about it or understand that it was a message of DNA. Now, DNA was not known about at the time this book came out. So this was basically the principle of life communicating itself through some very coded language. So is this creepy enough for you, Kareem?
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I'm really, really disappointed. Oh, my Lord. Anyways, the OTO, all these different witch factions or whatever you want to call them. Now, you know, and I can see if Buddha on the edge of discovering or did in fact discover what Crowley was doing or what he meant book, see where they'd be a little miffed about that. But, you know, as far as trying to kill him, I don't know if that happened, but he certainly has had a lot of health issues. Well, I met you and met Buddha, and that was through energy plates, because you called me up one day and you ordered them from me. We somehow became friends, and that Buddha told you about the plates or something. I don't remember.
I used to order the plates from Tim Beck, and he referred me to you. He said you can get the plates from her. You can get them because you were selling them to Beckley. So he put me in touch with you directly.
Okay. Yeah. Because I remember when you called, I'm like, oh, I go, because you told me your real name, and I'm like, I would change my name if I were you. And you're like, I do have a different writing name. And then you told me you were Peter Moon. I'm like, what? You're Peter Moon? It was funny.
Well, I'm glad it made you laugh. And I also will encourage any people listening to utilize the purple plates, because you demonstrated for me personally how healing they were after that four-hour drive I had taken to Massachusetts with Mary Hardy, and I had a bit of a headache, and you brought out that big purple plate from your trunk, and it assuaged my headache in half an hour or so.
Right. And Peter, that day that we spent together and the next day at that house, there were so many interesting people involved in that. And I don't, you know, I can't even say that I remember. I remember Mary Hardy, but that was so interesting, you know. I mean, it was so cool to be, and I thank you for inviting me to that and meeting all those different people from all over the place. And now, who was that Japanese guy who gave me a reading? Do you remember him?
He wasn't Japanese. He was Chinese. And his name is Dao. He calls himself Dao. And he's quite a character.
Characters, because remember we sat down for lunch the next day and we're all at the table, and I'm like, so what do y'all think about Bigfoot? And like three people there were like, oh, my son talks to him all the time in the backyard. And then somebody else said something like, oh, or whatever. And I'm like, oh, God. I mean, not that I didn't believe them, but it was just so funny.
Well, the house we were at was the house of Peter Shampoo and Susan Wilson. And Peter Shampoo is a geomancer. He is a wonderful source of information for studying the grids of the earth and how they all correlate. And he would be a great interview to have on your show, particularly if you can get the audio working well. And Susan actually was very interesting because she had actually known Rudolf Hess and was able to visit him in Spandau prison when she was a little girl. So that she wanted to share that story with me.
I thought that was so interesting also, Peter. Okay, so she spent time with Rudolf Hess, who, of course, we know is the, you know, Nazi. What was he exactly?
The deputy Führer, and he was the financier of the Nazi Party. He raised the money from the Bavarian Illuminati. I wrote a book about Spandau Mystery to follow up some of the threads of him, and that was my interest in. It's the only fiction, pure fiction book I've written, but it was arrived at to get at certain truths. Spandau Mystery, and I encourage people to go to my website and order that book, skybooksusa.com. And she was all very mysterious. She didn't really know why she was put in there. I think her grandfather was a general or something, and she just had this sort of very sort of brief but congenial association with Rudolf Hess. And Hess held all the signatory for – that's why he was locked up there. He was not only a duly authorized representative of the German people because they were an elected party. He was the head of the Nazi party when Hitler died. And he was a signatory – more importantly, he was a signatory to all the accounts in the hidden Swiss bank accounts. Now, Bormann took his job, and Bormann was a signatory too. But Hess was still a very active player. That's why they had to keep him locked up, because he had a lot of strings attached, and he was hung in his cell. He was murdered, and there's been a whole book on that. But in any way,
Peter, I was going to say, what was she having you do for her, Susan, during that trip?
I was probably teaching her some Qigong.
She wanted me to regress.
I regressed her. I did a regression on her in the hothouse. She had a hothouse there.
Right.
Just
and
trying
what
to
happened?
Get a memory. You know,
right.
I mean, we just kind of went back and got her to re-experience some stuff. It was more of a healing thing than an information thing. It was just a healing experience for her. That's all. It wasn't trying to get an information. It was just a healing experience as she went back and I helped her recall some of this stuff. And that was just a healing experience for her. I mean, nothing really informational to come out of that. It was a healing. So, but anyway, to get back to the Bigfoot was. Mary Hardy is, of course, the lady who wrote the book Pyramid Energy. She's one of the authors and the main author she is, and she wrote this book, and she has a pyramid in Allegan, Michigan. She lives on a lake. She has two houses by a lake, and she has a gathering up there generally every July. She has the Emerald Fire, the Sisters of the Emerald Fire, which is a women's group. She has this, the Temple of Saqqara, and this pyramid she built for her son, John Hardy. And John is the one who grew up with the Sasquatch. And I've met John, and John is dyslexic. He's very tuned in to certain spiritual energies. And I showed him the picture of the beast of the Sasquatch in the book, The Montauk Project, and he looked at it. He said his wife would read in the book because he was not good at reading. But he said that the Sasquatch are basically characters that bridge things between dimensions. He says they're very friendly, they're very peaceful, but they would, you know, they would fix things between dimensions. And he grew up with them. And so, okay, so you can believe him or not believe him. But at the time he grew up, that area was all swamp. Now it's all filled with houses. So, but if you talk to his friends who grew up with him, he says, well, you know, the damnedest thing, when we were kids, John would take us out there. And then the next thing you know, he'd disappear, and then he'd run, he'd see him over here, and he'd be laughing. He was like the swamp man. And he'd be running here and running there. And then one time, one of his friends was brought out there, and the next thing he knew, they were surrounded by Sasquatch, a whole colony of them. I think the guy, I forget what happened, he told me the story, he freaked out and ran. And John was just saying, oh, they're very peaceful. If you don't shock, they won't be shocked at you. and he was so they're very peaceful and loving. So John took me personally, and it was a very special instruction he got me on how to build a medicine wheel, which would basically deal with the energy coming into the earth. He put a stones around in a circle and one in the center to cap it, and this will channel energy going into the earth. And then it will go into the earth, and it will, where it comes up, you're distributing energy into the earth, and then you put a capping stone where it comes up out of the earth. So it will go into the earth and then come out, and you put a capping stone. So in any case, we had talked, and we decided that, I don't remember, I said we had to do a medicine wheel at Montauk. So we did this on the phone, and he does dowsing over the phone, and he doused the map. And he says, okay, and he had a Hagstrom map, and I had a Hagstrom map, and we both went to the area. He says, you want to go right here below this area, right here. Go and do the medicine wheel there. So I went out with two of my friends, and we had to go deep into this area near Reed Pond at Montauk. And I was shocked when we got there, because when we got to the spot on the map, it was the Montauk Indian Village. He doused to the exact spot of the Montauk Indian Village. Now, there's a spot there called the Montauk Indian Village. There used to be stones out there. First, they knocked over the stones, and they took them away. I was introduced to this by a healer who took me out there. She wanted to see the devastation that had taken place. And it's just a place where the Montauk Indians, ancient Montauk Indians, used to have a village. And where the point he pointed to was right near there. And so it validated that this guy was in tune with the native spirits. And he gave me the place to cap it. It took me years to cap it, to finish it. That was taking place at Orient, near Orient Point, which is across the water from Montauk. So in any case, John was one of these interesting characters who was not there, but that's why she says her son, you know, used to hang out with the Sasquatch. So, you know, it sounds kind of crazy, but there's a whole deeper story. And they built that pyramid for him when he was a young boy, when he incarnated, because she had experiences over in Egypt with her husband, Dean Hardy, who's passed away. And that was some of the interesting people that were at Peter Shampoo's house that weekend we spent up there.
Yeah, I guess it was amazing, you know?
Well, yes, and part of the highlight was on the Sunday we met, you were able to go on Saturday. That wasn't a lunch. That was a dinner we had on Friday night when everybody gathered together. The next day, you couldn't make it. We went to Shelbourne Falls. And Shelbourne Falls has, it's a short waterfall, but the pools go backwards. A pool will go clockwise. These went counterclockwise.
I've been there.
Yes. And Peter Shampoo said this is anomalous, and it's a major grid center. And he explained how all these celebrities were attracted there. He said Bill Cosby brought up a lot of property there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did.
And other celebrities, and it was a very spot that attracted celebrities and attracted energy. He said this was the liberal, Massachusetts is known for being liberal. He said this was the energy point that sort of evoked all this liberalism coming out of Massachusetts in terms of an energetic characteristic. Now, Peter will take a grid line, and he'll show you a grid line on the map, and he'll say, look at all these hospitals are along this grid line. All these churches are along this grid line, and all these schools are along this one. He'll show how these things, how people's societal habits follow energy as opposed to, energy as opposed to the other way around. So this was very interesting, but I was going to say the highlight of the trip was when we went to that castle in Greenfield,
Yeah, and I was going to say, yeah, poets see power.
And you read the poem. You did the poetry. You were the poet laureate for the day. I selected you, and we listened to your poetry. I was hoping we could hear some of your poetry tonight, but the audio is really fighting you. Doesn't want to hear you talk.
Right, I hear you. I hear that. So I was going to say about Peter Shampoo, he had that map in his house, and he pointed out that, in fact, Greenfield was on the ley lines or whatever routes there are through Greenfield, it attracts so much mental illness. Now, here's the odd thing about it, Peter, is that my boyfriend for 10 years is from Greenfield, okay? And so, I mean, but there is a lot of mental illness in Greenfield, you know? Just like he showed me.
He did say that, and I guess you had some personal experience with it.
yes, I did. Yeah.
Unfortunately, but the yes. So I was earlier talking about the occult corridor, Massachusetts. Well, what Buddha was stating was that the OTO migrated to Salem. I guess they originally had a major presence in New York during the 70s and 80s. And then eventually they migrated, and when I say they, specific people, and he named the specific people, but I don't keep track of these things. And then they would migrate there, and then he would talk about, you know, like people say marijuana is a gateway drug. Well, the OTO is considered a gateway to some of the deeper, darker groups. And we're talking about Satanism, and he talked about how the police in – would enable the cults to get away with certain things, you know, the satanic cults. And
right.
And he could give a whole diatribe on that, and that it was a lot of creepy energy up there. Now, Boston is the original, I guess, it's a financial wealth of this country is Boston. New York is the clearinghouse. Whereas in Germany, you have Frankfurt is the clearinghouse, where Munich is the old money. In Japan, Tokyo is the clearinghouse. Kyoto is the old money. In Massachusetts, it's New York is the clearinghouse. Boston is the old money. But Salem would even be the older money. And of a very, I guess what you'd say, well-placed families. I had a woman who used to be in touch with me who had horrific experiences at John Kerry's house. John Kerry, the Herman Munster of Massachusetts. Known as Herman Munster. Because he looks like Herman Munster. This is what they used to tease about during the election. So, she tied John Kerry to MKUltra and this weird stuff that was going on in his house, and she had suffered some great tragedies, not necessarily directly at the hands of John Kerry, but by one of the boys who was hanging out at his house. And it was very gruesome what happened to her. Yes. So, she was, you know, her genitalia was mutilated by this person who hung out at Kerry's house. So this was, according to her, and it was, you know, just quite a horrific story. And it just tied to a lot of weird Halloween stuff that Preston was working with some of the people she was involved with. It tied to a lot of, I guess, deep layered programming. And that was not stuff that I generally get involved in because there's not always so much you can do about it. and people tend to have fixated, you know, the deeper you get into some of these occult areas, that you find the people are sort of stuck and they can't free themselves. They're not, and it's very important that you have to free yourself. You can, and then you can take help. If you're able to free yourself, then you'll attract the help that you need. So,
right.
And of course, like I'm when I talk about these things that occurred many, many years ago, this sort of energy is in the past. It's not in the present. It's, but I'm sort of like recapitulating so much of what I've done. I'm going to be reiterating some of my work in videos that will be telling the tales in videos, not to supplant the book, but to give sort of an overview and a visual format for a new audience. This is something I will be working on so that people can, you know, learn sort of what I've done over the years in a new, to a new audience, and say, okay, well, this person's written all these books. Let us hear it. And I'll sort of tell the story. And this is sort of a background story that I just told tonight, which is sort of bits and pieces of it might be in my newsletters. But certainly it was my experience with the, what I call the occult corridor of the New England. And you're right in the middle of it, Corrine.
I know. And, you know, John, you know, Paroli, Buddha, he initiated me into his new group, and I was like, I don't know, Peter, I don't know what, I don't know. It was strange, and I didn't ask to be initiated, and I don't even know what it means, really, but anyway, you know, I guess we'll talk about that some other time. It's kind of interesting, but yeah, so I didn't really realize
that. I can talk to you about
that.
I can talk to you about that privately, but you know, it's just something he likes to do. He's very attached to, you know, I think he calls the group Swords and Shield.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, he does have a lot of, I guess, interesting connections. And the connections come in an occult, smoke with an occult tentacles attached to them. I will say also, what he said to me in our last conversation, which might have been 6 or 8 months ago, he says, you're the only person I can talk to about magic and you know, not be attacked after I talk about it. and this is one of the pitfalls of this subject, is that, you know, you start uncovering stones. And this is like, for example, if I was once having a policeman do some work for me, I needed to get some police work done to take care of some business. And it was not a priority for the policeman to do it, but it was something necessary I had to take care of to put somebody in their proper place. And I'll get to this, but he says, I'm dealing with homicides. And he says, many of these homicides never get solved. And, you know, it dawned on me in my conversation with him that these homicides, if you take all the homicides, you find them to a pattern. You'll connect them all to a certain pattern, and they're all going to go in a certain direction, and there's a certain place the police will not look beyond, because then you're going to get to people in positions of power. And if you start investigating people who are in power, that use death as an instrument to obtain their power, you're going to be doing a lot of pissing in the wind and possibly get yourself tied into those energies and knocked off by those energies. So it's very important to choose your battles wisely. And we see this in the case of the book, The Ultimate Evil, by Maury Terry. And it's a award-winning book that investigates the Son of Sam murders and shows the occult satanic groups to be operating there behind David Berkowitz. He was a part of, and David Berkowitz has confessed to this, that he was a part of a group. And the media and the police have really worked to sweep this away. So whether they're part of the conspiracy, they enable the conspiracy. So, you know, when you, and then I had heard by somebody who knows Maury Terry that he's just like taken to drinking, and the description of him that he was, let me see, the description I was given led me to evaluate that he was possessed. Okay. He investigated these murders. He was disappointed that nobody would ever pick up the trail other than himself, and it drove him to drinking, and he was kind of messed up, I was told, and that he did not necessarily accept spirituality. And if you're investigating demons, murders, and you don't understand this, you can very much become ill effect of this. My point being, and then this guy was trying to get me to investigate the Son of Sam, the aftermath of it, and I basically sent him my latest book and said, you know, you write the story, I'll help you edit it. And he just, no, he wanted me to do it. And I'm doing much more interesting things than that. And it's not
right.
So it's like this stuff, if you study this stuff, it can pull you into it and pull you down with it. And this is very important.
I believe
so, when he says that, you get attacked after you talk to magical people, yes, your dreams might be invaded, you might be tapped, this sort of thing. So one needs to proceed with a definite reason. And in it, I would also say, take the advice of Manly P. Hall, who says, if you're going to pursue the path of the esoteric, the path of the paranormal, and look for personal growth, you must have a pure heart. And I would add to that a pure intention. Because if you do not, it is going to come and take that impurity and do everything it can to corrupt you, and corrupt you in a way that you won't know that you've been corrupted, because you'll think you're doing the right thing.
Jeez, right.
I would also add here that, and it took me years to realize this, is that people who study Aleister Crowley often identify with him to the point where they think they are the reincarnation of Aleister Crowley, and this is common. So if you've been studying Crowley and you think you're Crowley, all I can say is welcome to the club. Because there are many, there are many Crowleys. Just like if you go to Disney World, you'll see many Mickeys. You might see a few Goofies too. And so, you know, if there was a OTO land, you might see a lot of people dressed up as Crowley at a Halloween party. And this is part of the pitfalls of studying this endeavor. And I never had that predisposition to want to identify with him.
Right.
But in any case, I had a very clear purpose.
Right. No, you're fascinating, Peter. Fascinating. We have a caller. Would you like to take a caller? I'm not sure. I'm assuming they want to ask you a question. Would you like to take a call?
Only if he's more audible. He or she is more audible than you.
Okay.
If they're less audible than you, I don't want to hear from them.
All right.
The question
we'll find
of audibility.
Kat, are you there?
Hello. Yes.
Okay.
Hello?
I can hear you.
Can you hear? Okay, go ahead, Kat. Did you have a question for
She's
Peter?
Better than you. She's better than you as far as audio goes.
I was wondering if these occultists that you're talking about, are they the Illuminati?
No.
So to
they're
speak,
not the Illuminati.
Is it?
The Illuminati is a, well, we could kind of say yes, but the Illuminati is a historical organization that is from 1776, was its founding by Adam Weishaupt, and then he was succeeded by a man, Giuseppe Mazzini, and Giuseppe Mazzini was an Italian. He was a Jesuit, and the founder of the Illuminati, Adam Weishaupt, was a Jesuit as well, supposedly defrocked. So what the Illuminati did was they basically took over the papal states and tore down the papal states and created the country we know as Italy. And they set up what's called the tri-standard flag, which is red, white, and green in Italy. This was following the tricolor flag of France and the United States, which were red, white, and blue. So they had an influence there. And, of course, they have continued to exist in some form or another through different groups. Albert Pike, who started the Revolutionary War, was connected to them. And he was very, I guess, Masonic and whatnot. But the Illuminati becomes a catchword for so many things. And, of course, the, I guess what you'd say, the complementary organization to the OTO is the Argentum Astrum, which is the Order of the Silver Star, which identifies itself as the Illuminati. I don't think you would say that it might claim successorship to that Illuminati, just like the OTO claims successorship to the Knights Templar. There are many organizations that do this. But and you might find some trace elements to it, but it's going to be a very obscure trace element to the actual Illuminati. But the Illuminati is a catchword that's been identified with shape-shifting reptilians, and it's unfortunate. And I hope that answers your question.
Yes.
My answer.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, Kat.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good night.
Have an excellent evening.
Thank you, Kat. That's interesting because everyone's like, oh, the Illuminati, blah, 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 and they really don't know the history of what the Illuminati, where it began, and so that's interesting to hear. You do a lot of investigating with time travel, aliens, UFOs, this type of thing, Peter. Do you actually protect yourself when you're doing your books? Do you have to protect yourself? What do you do?
Well, that's a good question. I'm first going to clarify that I don't really go into the UFO area that much. I've always felt that I understood as much about UFOs as I needed to. and the same with aliens. I don't deny their existence, but those become like a squirrel cage for people who investigate them, in my opinion. I did author a book with Preston Nichols called Encounter in the Pleiades, An Inside Look at UFOs, which is about his experience of being aboard a UFO and with his encounters with aliens in the Pleiades. But these are not really so much my experiences. With regards to protection, the main protection I had working for me, was the purity of my heart and the purity of my intention. I was doing what I was supposed to do. Now, this doesn't mean that it didn't come with some fallout. My marriage fell apart, and it became a very, hard issue to deal with in terms of I felt that what I went through would have killed most people mentally, emotionally, or physically. And so if I look at my own history without being egocentric, I look back at what I've been through, I'm a very strong person. So, but basically what I do, I sort of evolved through all of this writing into the practice, courtesy of the Montauk Medicine Man, into Qigong. And Qigong is the best protector of that exists because it's Qigong means breath work. Qi is breath, spirit, or life, and Gong is work. So in the motto of Qigong is control your breath, control your life. So if you can control your breathing, you can control your life and the situation around you. So if you see a spooky demon, breathe. Now, what I would have done prior to learning this breathing technique was I would look at the demon and stare it down, confront it. And I came to a point where it didn't always work, and where you will encounter some of these characters in the astral realm, so to speak, and you have to basically acknowledge its presence, and it will extract something from you. It might just be an acknowledgement that they're there, and then that you have to pay homage to a power that is you're not greater than. So, but that was before I learned breathing, and breathing is just a wonderful thing to do. And by the way, I don't know if I ever wrote this to you on Facebook, but the best technique in the world to quit smoking is to breathe, because people get relaxation when they smoke by the breath. It's not the nicotine. It's the breathing. A deep breath of a cigarette relaxes you because it's a deep breath, not because you're inhaling tobacco. But that deep breath is very relaxing. So if one can breathe without lighting up a cigarette and pretend they're taking it, it's one way. But I've also learned that people can't quit unless they want to quit. But that's just my two cents about smoking.
All right. Okay, so we're going to wrap up a bit early tonight because Chris has helped me and she's been phenomenal in helping me with the sound, even though I got to figure this out in the future. I don't know. Anyways, again, Peter Moon, find him at digitalmontauk.com or buy his books, which are phenomenal, at skybooksusa.com. They're so interesting, and they're so easy to read. I mean, they're just phenomenal books. He's a great storyteller. And just, oh, my God, there's so much to read there and so much to learn. So, again, Peter, I so much appreciate you jumping on tonight, and I'm glad your sound was good. And because you had a lot more interesting things to say than I did. So.
Well, I hope this happens both times we talk. We have to get your audio working, so you will sound good too, and we can hear some of your poetry.
Thank you, Peter. I don't think anyone else has ever asked me to read my poetry but you.
They've never heard it, that's why.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate that. Okay, and thanks
that's
everyone for joining me
that's
tonight.
A lie. That's a lie.
What's that? It's a lie. Oh, you're right. All right.
I'm just keeping it real. I'm just keeping. I am your. I'm the little conscience on your shoulder. Of course, we love your poetry, and we've asked you. I've even played it on my show. For heaven's sake.
Yeah, you're right. Anyway. I know. You're okay. Right. I was just trying to make Peter feel sorry for me. But anyway,
there's a caller that was sitting there all night at 617. Though, if you want to take them quick, I do have a little bit of time. If you want, it's up to you. I don't know
okay.
that they were calling for. If they're calling for a reading, let's say no. 617, if you're calling for a reading, then no. But otherwise, keep your hand up and we'll come get you. Okay, they still have their hand up. Let's go see
okay.
who they are.
617.
Hello, 617.
Hi, this is Brandon. Hello.
Hi, Brandon.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me on, first of all. I learned a lot of stuff. Very interesting about, I live obviously from the 61 area code, 17 area code, and it was really interesting to hear this corridor as you speak of, Peter. I really would love to hear more about that. And I also used to work in Greenfield. I used to teach special education out there in Shelburne Falls, and I know Bill Cosby has I've been to Bill Cosby's house. He has like a mountain out in Shelburne Falls. It's very energetic, and it's Mount Hermon, which is right near there as well, school where Uma Thurman and Bob Thurman used to live, and a lot of occult energy is attracted there. What I wanted to ask kind of was, you're a great writer, Peter, and New England has its share of good writers, but from the horror genre, let's say, or the paranormal, like, you know, you go from Nathaniel Hawthorne to say somebody like Edgar Allan Poe, and then to H.P. Lovecraft, and then to someone like today, Stephen King. And I would argue that, you know, this occult energy definitely still is here. You know, it's in the blood, it's in the ground. Like, you know, I just buried my great uncle, and, you know, the OTO showed up, you know, all these different orders, Freemasons, you name it, showed up, no priests, but. But I'm connected to all this stuff. And
yes, I know.
It's interesting to hear. Like, you know, I want to protect myself from it too. At the same time, because you're right. Like, there's a tendency to get way too wrapped up in it. And so I was, you know, it was really, you kind of read my mind there about breathing, right, and everything. So I just wanted to thank you for coming on, for the ladies, for hosting you. It's really a pleasure and honor to be here, and I thank you very much. And,
well, I have a recommendation, is that you visit Shelbourne Falls if you haven't.
Yes, yeah, all the time, yep.
That's a great place for energy and to do Qigong at. And that, you know, I'm going to recommend that Corrine invite you over for a purple plate seance, and you get to meet her.
Well, I'm only 15 minutes away, so why not, you know?
Yeah, and Brandon, and if you don't know who Brandon is, he comes from a famous family, a Massachusetts family. It's tied to a lot of interesting things, but we won't go into that. Because I might, well, actually, the author Peter Lavenda sort of tried to expose it, and I don't know. Peter Lavenda is up to his armpits and all this occult stuff, not necessarily in a good way. And I know Douglas Dietrich has dedicated a lot of shows to ripping at Peter Lavenda, but Brandon comes from a very interesting family that's tied to a lot of paranormal stuff. That what is it, Andre Puharich? The nine or whatnot. But in any case, what I wanted to say about the occult corridor, when I first learned about it I guess it was a physicist friend of mine. He was a pure physicist. He said he once was going to Massachusetts and they wanted to have an occult experience. They had a group of them. So I guess they drove and they ended up at the door of some witch. So they had their occult experience. They were happy with that. They got to meet a witch. But in any case, where it really came home to roost, I used to get calls from a guy in Connecticut. His name was Dave. And he had all of these, would report about all these dog sacrifices that would take place, and he would isolate the homes and the names of the people, like he used to say Henry Kissinger. He used to always put Kissinger's name into this. And all these dog sacrifices that would follow this corridor. Now, this is New England, Connecticut. And they would all end up at a rock in West Salem, New York, known as Snoopy Rock, Balancing Rock. There's this huge rock that's balanced on this balanced two rocks.
Yeah,
it looks like Snoopy. And he says, this is where the sacrifices all culminated, the biggest mass of dogs in somebody's backyard. And then I would have other friends tell me that these dogs, they looked into it and this dog sacrifices didn't exist. It's sort of like they say the satanic panic, the Satanism didn't exist, but it did exist. So this is this is where I started learning about it. And, you know, Connecticut was kind of like the runway. And it was the runway that was emanating in Massachusetts and coming all the way to Salem, which was kind of the ass end of it in my observation or from what I heard. And, of course, you have to look at the inception of – I mean, it's going from Salem to West Salem, basically. And basically, you know, you're talking about the original settlement of the Pilgrims and the Mayflower – what do they call them? The Mayflower Group the Daughters of the American Revolution, who are all tied to the mind control stuff. So yes, this is, but as they say, it's good not to get too wrapped up in it. It's better to breathe and learn how to feel your own body and feel good, because this stuff won't make you feel too good. But you wanted a creamy show, so I tried to give it to you.
And you did indeed give me a creepy show.
Well, maybe I'll
learn more about you in the future, Brandon, hopefully.
Sure. It's good. I think I like Peter's the Facebook thing, so just check me out there, and I'll find your post, and we'll connect.
Okay.
Sure.
All right, good. Thank you for calling, Brandon.
Thanks, Peter. It was a real pleasure always. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so that was good. Okay, so once again, Peter, thank you so very much. Every time you're on, we get tons of listeners. I get tons of archive listens, and there's a good reason for that. So
Let me say things. I'm going to be coming out with a lot. I'm going to be coming out with some videos soon that will be explaining space-time, and all of these will eventually lead to some of the direction we were in tonight, but the priority is to get people to understand some of the basics. So those who are listening and interested, stay tuned to my website, digitalmontauk.com, or friend me on Facebook, and there's going to be some exciting things coming down the pike in the next 6 months.
Excellent, excellent. I really look forward to that. And, well, you know, as soon as you get something together, we'll set up another show. Hopefully I'll have my sound sorted out, and we'll give a go at it, you know?
Okay. Thank you, Corrine.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Peter. And thanks, everyone, for hanging in there through all these troubles. And thank you, Chris, for helping out. And we'll see you guys again soon. And have a good night. Thank you.
Visit purpleplates.com today. For over 40 years, the Purple Energy Plates have been delivering amazing results for their many customers. Inspired by the great genius Nikola Tesla, the harmony, healing, and energetic effects of the plates have proven over and over to be beneficial and often miraculous to thousands of customers. With their money-back guarantee and the many benefits, how can you afford not to get one? Check their site for daily specials and choose from their many energy products. You won't be sorry. Visit them today at purpleplates.com for mind, body, and spirit. And expect a miracle.